Last time on Desperate Attune, the crew were trying to untangle the web of demonic intrigue that found themselves in. Saida and Muntaz had managed to escape from their attackers and reunite with the rest of the crew, but Saida was gravely injured, and she collapsed into Bidrohe's arms as soon as she got to them. As Bidrohe, Clem, and Mushfik frantically tried to figure out a way to care for their injured friends, Ankia the Veiled and Ranbir appeared before them. The Falling Star Masters demanded an explanation for the demonic magic that had been at play. The crew refuted having knowledge of any such thing, and in turn demanded answers for the attack on Saida and Muntaz. After a short back and forth, it became clear to both parties that they were being played. Powerful magic had been invoked, with Saida at the center of it, but none could say exactly what had happened. Mushfik and Clem saw to Muntaz and Saida respectively, while Bidrohe and Ankia went to investigate the scene where a man who'd attacked Saida lay dead. The corpse bees were already at work, and after consulting them, the helpful Rakshasha on the scene concluded that the man was not from Uduasha, but from Duskfall, all but confirming that this was Mylar Eclipse's doing. Bidrohe could not let the ambush on his ustad go unanswered, and he asked Ankia to deliver his formal challenge to Mylara. Meanwhile, Clem had taken Saida to Aaron, their medic friend from the Unity War. Aaron was not pleased to have a half-dead person dropped at his feet unannounced, and he made this known. Nevertheless, he honored his friendship with Clem and took Saida in. Muntaz, troubled by visions of the Prince of Endings, went to consult the occult book they'd taken from Salman long ago. Mushfik had accompanied her, and having had his own misgivings about the prince, helped her study the book. Though he wasn't able to decipher most of what he saw, Mushfik found a reference to his missing ustad, Shahid, in a story that foretold his death. He immediately went to see Zahir and told him how Ustad Shahid had been smuggled into the city and what he'd found in the book. They tracked down the people smuggler and shaken information about Ustad Shahid out of him. But first, Mushfik had another lead to chase down. Umid had told him to never trust gentlemen like Al-Qadir, and Mushfik intended to find out why. He brought his suspicions to Bidrohe, who told him that while Al-Qadir mostly peddled bullshit, that wasn't all he did. Where he could, he helped people out, and even his bullshit had a purpose. It gave the Khetrasi people a focal point. Mushfik still didn't buy the Man of the People Act, and when Al-Qadir paid a visit about legal troubles miring Tundorji, Mushfik confronted him directly.
Uduasha City, where the sun is a mirror and the moon a shadow, where dancers cavort in forbidden operas, making love to forgetting and flame, where the wealthy play at war with silver swords and silken sashes, where the people mine the dead heart of a burning star for cannonballs and pipework, and where a thousand secrets hide in a forest of paper and ink. Here, the five keybearers reside, the five who know the secrets of the broken gates of death. Five. Five only. There is no sixth spire, forlorn and forgotten in the desert. There is no one who looks to the displaced, the poor and destitute and landless, whose ancestry has been stripped from them by foreign looms and foreign sparkcraft, and no one has ever heard of the House of Endings. But this is their story. Their roots pulled up and burned, they stand in filth up to their necks. And that is precisely why they must keep their heads ever high. Welcome to Uduasha, immigrant. May it fear the name of the house you will build. Welcome to Desperate Attune, an actual play podcast about characters with their identities in peril, played by an international cast devoted to fiction-first gaming, collaborative world-building, and complex character drama. You know, the feeling was initially mutual, so I don't blame you for being suspicious. Back home, I was not on the best terms with the freedom fighters, as it were, but water under the bridge,
Thing is, I must say, I don't feel like I figured Al-Qadir out, like...
No, I'm setting you up for it here. I'm setting you up for more information about him. Okay. So... You have seen that he's like somewhat serious about this, and he's now opening up about his past. That's the angle.
Okay. So, water on the bridge.
He's telling you.
Huh?
Yeah.
Where were you during the war, Mr. Al-Qadir?
Fine. I wish I could say water under the bridge. The truth is, I was a young man, and where I was in my brother's shadow. You see, My brother was the real man of the people, the real orator. He was a poet, he was a politician, and he was working for peace. Throughout all of this, he just wanted the fighting to stop. He pauses, and he says, "The guerrilla saw him as a collaborator, and I'm afraid someone on your side killed him."
Let me... Okay. Sounds like it should have been, this is an important guy, and Mushfik might remember something about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, why don't I... I don't know, maybe I'll roll something to see if I remember.
Yeah,
maybe. Thing. If you roll badly, you kill them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure. Or, you know, someone. Yeah. Okay, let's do... study? Fortune? Maybe? That makes sense, I guess. Hell yeah, I didn't kill him. Because it's a 6. Oh, no, this time it's a 3.
No,
I did kill him.
Yeah. Maybe you did, yes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think you would have a memory of this. So he was... It's one of those complicated situations, right? Like, Al-Qadr has his side of the story, you have yours, and everything. This was a guy who really was trying to, like, settle for peace and build some sort of nation. I think that was his thing. He was trying to do, like, we should adopt these innovations. We should try to, like, for, you know, make them our own, modernize Khetris. And in a certain light, the way the guerrilla viewed it, that was working with the occupiers. You could also argue that he was going, like, maybe we should not, you know, make this an all or nothing thing.
Okay, but okay. Let's give this man a name. What's his...
Yes. What is a suitable name for the poet? And I think he was legitimately, like, you know, a famous man, like a leader of the community. Let's name him after a poet. So anyone have a suggestion?
I mean, my immediate thought is something to do with Audre Lorde.
Okay, that's,
but that's
a connection.
I'm biased.
Al-Qadr and Audre Lorde.
Audre Lorde. No, Audrey.
Audrey? Hmm? I have an idea, actually, more Tagore references, but let's name him after Nikhil, the educated and gentle man from The Home in the World. Mm. The guy who is trying to modernize in that book. Nikhilesh, I think is his full name.
Nikhil Al-Qadr.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was, like, a guy who was trying to reform peacefully. And, again, you know, wars are complicated. Some people called him a collaborator. Some people said he was genuinely doing the best for the people.
All right. So Al-Qadr says that, his brother such and such, and so the gears turn, which we remembers. Like Al-Qadr, Nikhil Al-Qadr, like, oh, you're Nikhil Al-Qadr's brother. A man of the people, was he? Hmm? What people? What people was he the man for? Hmm? Writing his propaganda, writing his the spiel for Iruvia while we were dying, starving. That kind of man of the people.
Yeah, Al-Qadr's look sort of darkens, and he says, "Not everyone tries to solve their problems by simply killing everyone who comes from the outside. I know you couldn't forgive the collaborators, as it were. And I know you didn't regard him very highly, but you must understand, he was the only person I ever met who saw a future for our people, not just a return to a past.
A future for our people should have been decided by our people, not by our people held at gunpoint."
"Yes, but we were. We were held at gunpoint.
And only some of us tried to turn those guns back."
"I am well aware of the heroism that is, well, mostly written in epitaphs, to be honest." He looks down and he says, "It's pointless, really. I'm not the man my brother was. He could argue with you. He
He knew the rhetoric, he had the vision. Maybe he could even have persuaded you, but I can't. I really cannot.
You know what I realized then? Just now? Mm-hmm. Alcadir's been quoting his brother all this time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's on purpose.
Yes. Nice.
I never really understood the meaning behind all the things he said, but I believed in them. And I still believe our people have a future. Because that's the thing, Mushfiq Bai. You turned the guns around, and you fought your way out. You fought for a future, and you died for a future, and it died with you. But my future is not dead. My brother's future is not dead. I still have a future to believe in. I just don't know what it looks like exactly.
All right, so this might be kind of mean for Al-Qadir, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Uh-huh.
So, I think Mushfiq just kind of gives him, like, this look, which is, like, a bit patronizing, almost. Like, you know, he's like, oh, like, you know, like, there's so much he doesn't know, like, and he goes,
yeah.
You want to divide us up into those who fought for peace and those who just fought, right?
No.
No. But as the war went on and on, people like us became a problem for people like you. My unit was winning. We were destroying their radiant farms. We were fighting back their the mercenaries they sent. But, you know, our success became a problem. Because you can't say, like, oh no, we should sue for peace. We should, you know, accept these new ways. You know, when the old ways are working just fine. You see, Omid's men should have never found us. No one knew where we were, right? No one knew where we were hiding. No one knew our movements, except our own people. So someone sold us out. It's because of people like you that my friends are dead, my home is gone, and soon the only man that I've ever trusted in my whole life, I've learned today that he's going to die soon as well. It was people like your brother who did that, and don't tell me that it was otherwise.
Well, it was people like my brother, but it was mainly the farmers who worked beside him, really. The people who saw their farms destroyed in wars back and forth, by you, by the other side. I met some of them. To most of them, it didn't really matter who was doing the fighting, to be honest. Maybe that makes them cowards, I don't know. Or maybe it just makes them poor fools who never got an education, who never learned the value of patriotism. My brother said some wise words about this, he says, and he looks very, like, his hands shake.
Well, go on then, why not? For old time's sake. Let's see what this brother of yours had to say.
Well, I don't remember the words exactly. I've been really trying, but he said something to the extent of, well, it's not about the guns, and it's not about the money. At the end of the day, he said, all the people think is give me rice, you bastard.
Yeah, people want rice, but I don't think they wanted rice begging for it from people who think they're your betters. We deserve better than that.
We still do. Now on that, you and I agree.
I suppose we do.
Well, if you excuse me, I am not the poet my brother was. You may go on to wax poetic about nation and honor and so forth. I have a tailor to feed, and I need to continue collecting money, because it may not be very dignified for us to be beggars, but beggars cannot be choosers. That's not something my brother said. That's just a saying. Good day. And he goes off to beg, because that's what he is doing. And yeah, I think you figured Al-Qadir out.
Okay.
I hope so, anyway. I hope you feel like you've figured him out now.
Yeah, I have. I mean, okay, that was... didn't go in the direction I thought it would, but that was good. I like that. That was a good... That was an enjoyable scene.
Now you have to see him as a human being with worth and value and interiority, so fuck you. He's my friend.
And the effect of this is going to be, I mentioned that figuring Al-Qadir out will like advance him as a contact. I think the thing that's now been put up for like Mushfiq, and which he is going to be more open about too, I think, is his connection to Nikhil, the poet. So, you know, it slightly upgrades him. He has this cool legacy to call on now. And I think that's, you know, one fair outcome of it.
Mm.
All right.
Yep. But yeah, it was also just a very powerful scene. Do we need a check-in after that? It was like...
I'm good.
Quite a powerful debate.
I'm good. Are you guys good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, shit. I mean, Adia, that was really, really good.
Yeah. It was.
So, amazing.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, thank you.
Very beautifully done.
No,
it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a complex topic, right? I didn't want it to be overly simple, which is a challenge when coming from Al-Qadir, who is a simple man. Or maybe he isn't as simple as he seemed.
Mm-hmm. Those were some hidden depths. Like,
yeah.
Why even Captain Mackerel wouldn't say Lindsay's that deep?
As they say, as the tailors in Bangladesh say, and I will not translate this, simpler modhe gorgeous.
Yeah, you don't need to translate it.
Yes.
Hmm.
Okay, so we don't have that much time, but even though I said that I'm going to go and talk to Tum Dorji, that's not really a downtime action that I'm interested in spending time on right now. It's just something that I would announce as like the direction I'd like to take the Tum Dorji thing in later.
Yeah. Okay. Totally fair. I think that we have done two downtime actions from Mushfiq. We have done one downtime action from Bidruhi. Is it time to check in with Clem before we go on with Bidruhi's downtime actions? I think it is, because it's been...
The thing is, one of my downtime actions wasn't going to involve Clem, so I don't know if I should...
Yeah, I mean, go for that. If we do that, and then it can kind of like segue into what Clem did.
Yeah, yeah.
What
that
Clem
makes sense.
Was up to off screen.
Yeah. So you're talking to Tum Dorji first, and then going to Clem, or?
Yeah. I think I'll just like okay. Since I said that I'll do it without an actual scene, here's what's happened. Mm-hmm. I kind of like find Tum Dorji. He's probably still in his shop. Like you know, they don't tear that shit down in like a day, right?
Yeah. You know?
He's just not allowed to practice. But I think probably what's happening is that he's not allowed to sell anything. But because he's a proud man, he still goes and sits there from 9 to 5.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. While the people are like drawing up effectively like police tape around him because they're investigating all of his wares. So like this is the thing. Like he's not allowed to do business, and they're confiscating his entire stock. So like behind him. Men are just carrying away all of his stuff in boxes, but he still sits there.
To really go into the coffers of the state. That's what's going to happen to that shit. These farsooners surprisingly well dressed.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what happens when the boss turns on you.
Yes, well dressed farsoon. Very good. Good for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's also giving them fashion tips on how to wear the stuff they're stealing from him.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, yeah. Very good. So I'm just breezing through Tum Dorji's shop, and I kind of like go up to him. Sir, okay, I am really, really sorry about what happened. I just found out from Al-Qadir, sir. It makes absolutely no sense. It is horrific. It is an absolute travesty. I will see that justice is done. But sir, for now, I have a proposal for you. You come and you give me and my friends and all our sword fighting school people the flyest fucking look you can do, okay? You do that for us. You come right now, sir. Please, come to our temple, start working immediately. We shall fully recompense you, full payment. Don't worry a single thing about it. I have to really go right now. My ustad is dying from a poison, but you are always in my thoughts. Bye-bye. I love you. And I leave.
Okay. He just kind of looks surprised at this. And so, yeah. I don't know what that stomping noise in the background was. Did anyone else hear that?
Oh. I heard it. I just figured that was Zohab getting really excited.
I may have stomped on the table at some point. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Just checking so it does not recur. Anyway, yes, you storm away, and I think the situation with Tumdurji is like, Vidurhi may want to do this, but I mean, running a business for this guy is expensive. So yeah, the short answer is hiring him on as a tailor will cost you a lot of coin. Like a lot of coin.
It will be a claim, I think.
Yeah, probably a claim. Or or something like 8 coin worth of supplies so he can start again.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think some sort of claim here would be cool, but we can see about that later.
Yeah, absolutely. But for now, we will note that Tumdurji is basically incapable of helping you with anything. It's like his supplies are being stolen. He's also not necessarily best pleased with you because he has been told in no uncertain terms that, you know, you have been associating with the wrong people, and he is not so stupid that he doesn't know who the wrong people are in this situation. So,
Yeah. Plenty of things to feel guilty about right now. It'll have to wait its turn.
Yep.
Speaking of feeling guilty about things, So this is what I want to do with Clem. I want to go see Sayadanti, and I also want to get my healing done. And who better than the person who's healing Sayadanti?
Okay, so we're going back to Aaron.
Yeah. You think we don't want a scene with Vidruhi and Aaron? Come on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. Clem, are you okay with this development?
Yeah, of course. I think Clem's been visiting Saida, or at least has been by their bedside.
Excellent. So how are you introducing Vidruhi? Do you just bring him in, or?
I feel like Clem's going to have sent word ahead to say, I'm bringing another one. Mm-hmm. This one is a lot louder.
Yeah.
Well, it's really easy to be louder than Saida right now.
A lot is underlined about 3 or 4 times.
Yes. So he gets this letter, and then you step into his very damp and humid workshop, which is like damp from all the steam leaking from the stupid bathhouse pipes that go past here.
And they smell? What do they smell like, Prince?
Oh yes, that traditional kebab smell that everyone loves is, of course, drifting in. Although I don't think that's held in the pipes. I don't think they pipe in the kebab, but it does waft over. Now, I'm now imagining them having pneumatic kebab pipes where you like put in a kebab and it just shoots out into your hand on the other end.
Oh my god, the technology.
Yes.
What we could have. What we could have now.
Invent the first automat kebab. Kebab automat. Yes.
Yes.
There's a niche here.
Probably there's some harebrained Sparkrite working on that, so it smells even more like kebab in here now.
And we know what that Sparkrite parts, and we know the name of that Sparkrite.
Yes. Yes. It's Mirat, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. So Aaron hates Mirat.
Excellent. Beautiful.
Okay. I love how Miraz and his crew killed your father, but Aaron hates him more because of the kebab smell. Makes sense. Anyway.
Fair enough.
Just to announce for this, I think this is something we'll see in the future, but I was talking to Adiyat about having a conversation at some point between Vidruhi and Abbas.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but that's in the future.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, dad.
Well, we'll see what the circumstances are. But anyway, I am coming in with Clem, or would I come to see you? I don't know. Would you bring me with you, or should I just come in?
I think it makes sense to bring you. If nothing else, like, it's not like there's Google Maps in this world. People need to show you where things are. So
that's true.
Yep.
So this guy, what is your relationship with this person? And you understand exactly what I'm asking you.
He's very important to me.
Yes, go on. No, please go on.
No, we
don't.
We spent a lot of time together.
I bet you did.
You were met at the door by one of the apprentices, by the way. Not by Aaron himself, but one of his, like... He has some people helping him out. I mentioned there were some people running around in the shop.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
And this person is handing out ear protection.
Do you need me... this is the very loud one that I sent note about. Do you need me to fix the pipes again?
Actually, it's being worked on, the assistant says. It gives you the ear protectors, and then you start to hear an awful racket in the vacuum, like slamming and hissing pipes and like...
Clem, I don't want to question your judgment, but is this the restful atmosphere that Sidanti needs right now? I say, yelling over the headphones.
Yes, and yelling over the headphones and the noise. And in response, you hear Aaron yelling from inside, he is loud!
Yes, this is restful for a given value of rest, mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, I think the racket stops. And Aaron, yeah, you come face to face with this like scrawny man with his artificial leg, his artificial hand, and his thick glasses with many lenses that flip up and down.
Hello. So you are Clem's friend.
Well, if you want to be technical about it, I suppose.
Oh, please be technical. I want to know.
Well, he puzzles for a moment and then he says, actually, Clem, did you ever renounce your titles? I realized I didn't ask.
I just spin around on my heels and look at Clem.
Well, when I last visited, there wasn't time. You know that as well as I do. Wasn't time to, so...
So technically then, Clementine is my commanding officer.
Say what the fuck now? Clem, are you, would this be a surprise? You haven't mentioned being in Imperial Military or anything on your past, right? I don't think you did.
No.
Did you? No.
I fought in a war. Yeah.
Okay, this man, clearly very Akarusi. You can tell it in his bullshit accent. And if comment, you were with the Imperial Army.
I was under the impression that you were injured somewhere. It's clearly not your lungs or your tongue, so what the hell is wrong with you? He says as he approaches me.
Okay, one thing at a time.
You can see why I took Saeed here.
Clem, we should have a conversation about this later. I understand you want to maintain your privacy and your mysterious past. I totally understand. So, I shall respect it.
Clementine, would you say his condition is bad enough that he requires a sedative? You have a nasty-looking syringe at this point.
Actually, right now, I would very much love to be calm, but I have something to do that would require full possession of all my nerves. Otherwise, but I will come back for that sedative, please, if I'm still alive afterwards. Clem, that's something I have to tell you about afterwards. Anyway.
He's just a kid. He's just a kid, Aaron.
Right. A kid. Very well. Little friend, where's the boo-boo? He says extremely condescendingly.
Yeah. Where did the black blade scar me? I'm trying to remember.
I think he cut you across the forehead so that you would have like blood in your eye kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah. So that's... Obviously, it's not like a flowing wound or anything. But no. I think it hurts and it does like... stop me from like concentrating fully. Also, it doesn't look good. So yeah. I would just kind of say, okay, friend, sir, I am hurt here. The boo-boo is this car. Okay. Can you, I don't know. I mean, mostly I'm here to see Saidanti, but since you're a healer, I thought you could have a look at it too.
Ah, yes. Well, the patient is resting. Don't worry. They have ear protections too. I do things by the book.
May I see the patient?
Yeah, he folds down his lenses to inspect your wound. And Saida is, I think, like, this guy is a battlefield medic, and he's very pragmatic, and also he doesn't have a lot of space. I don't get the impression that he's, like, super rich. He's, you know, like, not a medically licensed doctor or anything. That's why he is in these shitty locales. So I think Said has just laid out on something that basically looks like, and may in fact be, an autopsy table. But it's somewhere to rest.
You know what? I'm just not going to comment on it.
Yeah.
I can tell that Clem is uncomfortable with me being here, and that I'm embarrassing her. So I'm just going to be like, it's very cool that you were willing to help Saidanti. I appreciate this very much, Mr. What was it?
Aaron. Aaron is the name.
And is it Mr. Aaron or Lieutenant Aaron or Sergeant Aaron? Yeah.
What would be his title, actually? Clem, I think you can establish this.
Let's make him a lieutenant.
Uh-huh. Yes. So he says, Lieutenant, if it all that matters to you.
Hmm. Wait. I mean, okay. So Lieutenant is pretty high up. And Clem was commanding officer, which would mean... And then I'm just looking at Clem wide-eyed.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I think he is preparing a bandage. And... puts it helpfully over your eyes and face and pulls you back as he, like, covers up the wound with a bandage soaked in some curative solution. Mm-hmm. It's like almost garroting you with the bandage. He's trying to drag you away.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to roll healing.
Let's see how effective his bandage garrote is.
So that's what? Two dice in because of crew and expert, right?
Tier. And expert, yeah.
Okay. I recently acquired Vigorous, so I get an extra dice.
Mm-hmm. So it's 3.
Very nice.
Then. And if you roll 6, you heal instantly.
There's a 6 right there!
Ah. So he puts the bandage on, and I think the effect of this, since you roll a 6, is he is just kind of slapdash putting the bandage on. But the end result is it looks cool. It, like, goes down slightly over one eye. It looks like you've had a very dramatic, like, cool war wound. And, you know, it will not scar worse than any of your other scars. And it will not get infected. I think basically what he contributes with here is he, like, you know, competently disinfects the wound. So it stings in the moment, and then it will heal.
Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, I give him a deep bow, and I say, thank you very much, Lieutenant Sir. And thank you again very much for looking after Saida Auntie. And then I'm going to walk over to her.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think I look down at her, and then I take out a small dagger, and I cut off a lock of my hair. Mm-hmm. And I put it in her hand.
Yep.
And I say, my payment to you for all you have taught me. And then, you know what? This duel that I'm supposed to have with Mylar Clev, I haven't told a single one of the others about it yet.
Nope.
And I'm trying to figure out how to play that. Because I think, like, what Bidrid wants to do is just go face her alone.
Yeah.
But that's, I don't know, like, what's everyone's thoughts on that? It wouldn't be a score if I just face her alone, of course. But is it a score if it's a duel anyway?
I think if you brought it up, Clem would immediately say, I'll be your second.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. That's
something that he's thinking about asking, but he's also, like, not sure if he should bring anyone involved, get anyone involved. But they will fight dirty.
I mean, she's definitely... fighting dirty, right?
Yeah. Okay, it's a score then. Let's call it a score. Yeah.
Let's call it a score. All right.
I think it'd be a fun score as well. Fuck my Lyric Lev.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to say, Clem, it's very loud here. So I'm going to go. I'm going to go check on Mumtaz and maybe afterwards you could meet me down by the docks and we could have a chat. I will also ask Mushrik Bhai to be there. There's something I have to tell both of you.
Bidri, I just wanted to say, sorry, I didn't tell you about the fact that I fought for the Imperials. It's part of the reason I'm here, to change things.
Yeah.
I thought you'd be ashamed of me. I don't know why your opinion matters, but it does. You're a good kid.
he'll listen to the first bit. And then the very last bit. He'll ignore the middle bit. He makes his own narrative. So I think he's going to clasp Clem by the forearms, right? He's going to hold you on the forearms, and he's just going to look you in the eye. He's looking up, I guess. You're tall, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's looking up, and he's just going to say, "Sibling Clem, I understand why you didn't tell us, but I will be the first to assure you that none of us care in that way. I suppose you fought what? The Skovlanders, right?
Yes.
It happened all the way over there. It happened with people that aren't nothing to do with us. And we don't care, really. But not in that way. But I do care for two reasons. One, means you are absolute stone cold badass, which is what I knew all along. So I am right, which makes me very happy. Second bit is that it means you've seen some really nasty, awful shit. And I understand why you don't want to bring it up. But it's good for us to know. Okay? It's good for us to know that you saw things that we didn't. And, you know, you have not been with us long. You're not one of the family in a literal sense. But we are siblings, I think. And maybe you will marry Shredakatham, I don't know. And he's just giving a smile to show that it's a joke. Or whatever. Sorry, that was a stupid thing to say. Let's retract that bit. I am trying to make light of situation because I might die.
You might
die. I'll explain that one later too.
Your forehead wound was not that bad.
Yeah, no, don't worry. There's something else. Listen, the point is, it's all cool. Welcome to family. Okay, I really have to go. I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
Go check on your girlfriend.
Yes.
Do you need money for a carriage to get there? Or do you need somebody to go with you? You need anything? A drink?
What are you doing right now? It's like, what the hell? What's happening? Oh, okay, I see. Okay, it's okay. Yes, some money would be nice, I guess. Sure.
Buy yourself something nice.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron in the background goes like, this lock of hair thing is not a funeral, right, is it? She's not dead, she's just sedated. I don't know if I made that clear.
I can't hear it because of all the noise.
Yes.
And I buy Mumtaz some nice sweets that she likes, and I'm just going to go indulge my face real quick.
Sure. Okay, that's your downtime actions done, right?
Yeah, all the free ones. I will also real quick train playbook.
Okay, so spending a coin?
Yeah. I overindulge, by the way, which I think I think makes sense.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
You know what? Usually I want to make overindulges an interesting scene, but in this case, let's just hit you with heat and give you that second wanted level.
Did we minus one from our heat because of high society?
Let us
check real quick.
Yeah, we have.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
You have two left and you get two from overindulging. And I think it makes sense because you've been hovering around here and slapping on a second wanted level. Like, it's a bit harsh, but I think it makes sense. And the reason that your overindulgence leads to this is, of course, we have established that when you overindulge, it's not Mumtaz, it's not you, it's Cherubino who is there when you go visit them. And he has a fucking grudge against you now. Well, it's more against Mushfik, but you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I like this, but I think it's interesting that it's not tapped, that she, even this didn't make her go, maybe I shouldn't be seeing this guy.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been on the table before she saw visions of the Prince of Endings, I think. Now she's in too deep, right?
Mm-hmm. Today we are all hoes and we are all loyal.
Uh-huh. Yes. Mm-hmm. I also think this consequence is technically much worse for you than that.
Yes. Yes, I know.
A second wanted level will hit pretty hard at this point. And I think mm-hmm. this time it's not Mushfik. This time it's the whole cruise just shenanigans catching up with you, right? Like, Cherubino's going to dig up some dirt on you. I think the spark is like he sees you there and then he goes like, this fucking guy, Mushfik's fucking friend. Let's see what I can get on these people. And then he goes on a dirt digging project of his own and just stirs the pot. Mm. And it's enough to tip us into a second wanted level.
Mm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Bidrahi. Your past is caught up with you.
Real quick, I'm going to indulge playbook and I'm going to spend crew rep for that, if that's okay for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay. And the way this is going to look is that I am going to be in the docks waiting for my friends, as I have said I will be. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go to like the jetties and so on, like where they're like the harbors and all that. And I'm going to practice dodging and so on by like jumping from like a wooden piling on like the water to wooden piling on the water, and it looks stupid.
Very good. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's all. Okay. I'm going to do it all night.
Mm-hmm.
What is Clem doing meanwhile? Because you have two downtime actions.
Yes. So I'm going to do some indulge vice as well. So, mm-hmm. which is with our blacksmith friend Woots.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm going to be forging some ancestral steel, Severossi steel, into weaponry with him. So just getting a whole load of hot and sweaty, probably like down Clem.
You're just making more weapons. This is your
more
vice.
Weaponry.
Yeah. Okay.
More weaponry. Well, I think it's a very specific process to do with venerating ancestors and shit.
So to dig down into this a little bit, why does Woots know about this? Does he know about this because he has some connection to Severus? Or have you taught him? Or like, what's the deal with that? Why is he your vice purveyor?
I think he and I, in return for being able to stay with him, Clem's been teaching him how the ancestral smiths of Severus would have forged their blades.
Okay, that's interesting. So
weapons,
you live with him?
Yeah. Mm,
yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. So what we've seen of him is he talks to himself and he's kind of like easily distracted, but I think he's very focused as he forges. And I think his talking to himself turns into like work songs, which he's surprisingly good at. So I don't know if there's a scene here. It depends on your role, but I just wanted to establish like why he knows this and what it looks like. So yeah, I guess it's not so much him working as you just borrowing his smithy to do this work yourself at this moment. I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but he has all the assets necessary for it and he knows how to do it too, should there be a need for it.
Let's see. Went all right.
Mm-hmm. So three stress lost out of the six you have.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if there's much of a scene here. Or we've seen Woots. I don't think there's a conflict or overindulgence going on. So.
Yeah.
Unless you want to add something?
No, I don't think so. I think we're forging, we're singing. Mm-hmm. It's all very bros hanging out with bros. You know,
very
nothing
cool.
There.
Okay, one more question, just to drill down into this ancestor tree, because I think it's very cool. Does that mean you know your genealogy, going like super far back? Do you like dedicate it to specific ancestors?
Heralds.
Yeah.
Severusi heralds.
Yeah.
Mm. This steel is my, say, the bones of my great 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 grandfather or some shit. It's a metaphor, but it's also real.
Yeah, absolutely. My question is mostly, have you like memorized all of these names? Because I don't think you have the heraldry shit with you. So is this stuff you know by heart?
Yeah.
Cool.
They do know it by heart. These were the words that Clem chanted to themselves while they were journeying through the desert to Idwasha.
What if, here's a suggestion. What if these Severusi coats of arms and so on that knights are given, they just look like devices to everyone else, but Severusi know how to read them as like complicated mnemonic devices that showcase genealogy.
Sure.
Oh, that's really cool, yeah. Because the blades of Severusi blades are also described as having like the family histories etched into them. They're like these very wide-edged blades. That might be very cool.
Yeah, I like it. Oh, I just realized another thing then. Do you have these names written on your shield? You don't have a sword, but you do have a fine shield.
Oh, I don't know, because I think this is a Skov shield. I think it's got names, but it's not Severusi names on it.
This, nice.
Yeah, this, I like that. Yeah, very cool.
Literally stolen valor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. And also, I mean, we all have swords and so on, even if it's not the playbook item, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course. And I guess now we know who makes them. It used to be Woot. Now it's probably mostly Clem.
Very cool.
Uh-huh. Yes. What is your second downtime action?
Now, I was thinking, how hard do we want to go into some desert exciting stuff? Because I would like to do something around getting some sort of mount or hunting pet or what have you to go with that Severusi vibe.
Right.
We discussed this. Yeah.
Yeah, like
the
that.
Desert's fucked up, so I would not mind seeing some desert.
There's no sixth spire out there, right? Just some horrific Deathlands beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It just has to make sense for us to do it in character.
I'm thinking because the Prince of Endings, and didn't we mention the desert with Mushvik a couple of hours ago as well?
Yeah. So you guys have like individual reasons to go out.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a reason to go out. I just can.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So long as we're interested out of character, it's cool. But we just also need to find an in-character reason, which we can find.
Yeah. I think the obvious one is this Gurban the Camel guy who is going to kill Shahed and who is not necessarily in Udwasha at this moment. Maybe it's like he's in the desert and he's coming back to do it or something.
Sherekatam, someone's trying to kill you, Rustad?
Well, like that. We don't like that. We don't know this in character.
That's all you need. That's all you need.
Yep. Anyway, I think a guy who's nicknamed the Camel probably goes into the desert some, so he could be in the desert at a convenient time if we need a motivation to go there.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Mm-hmm. So you're working on some sort of long-term project to get a mount before this, or some sort of long-term project to like find one in the desert and tame it, or what's your angle?
I'm feeling prepping for this. So it's like, I have the supplies, I have the things, I know where one is, I know how to.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. So it's a clock to prepare for a rather dangerous score to obtain. These won't even be like Severusi horses, because this is the desert. These will be like the weird shit that survives from the dead ecosystems. So, yeah. On that note, even though it is a score, I feel like it's more than a 4 o'clock to prepare for such a thing. It's probably... okay, I'll let you pick a 6 o'clock or an 8 o'clock. And results being like, the longer the clock, the more badass the mount. Basically.
Let's make it an 8 o'clock. I want a badass mount.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah, let's go for it, I think.
Then the 8 o'clock basically sets you up for a score that will just give you the ghost pet ability, I think, like as one of the rewards. Mm-hmm.
And we can do this, some Prince of Ending shit, because Clem's interested in that, and I think it'd be really cool to see.
Yep. Okay, so it's an 8 o'clock, and you are preparing to go into the desert. What's your first step to prepare to go into the desert?
Well, the first step to preparing is knowing, right? Going to go up onto the defences, the walls of Udwasha, and I'm going to look out over the desert.
Ah, yes.
Survey.
Uh-huh.
where
survey the desert.
Where should I not go?
Yeah, the funny thing is, I think we established one of the best places to see Uduasha is like the makeout spot where Vidri took Mumtaz. So I think you're serving from the same position, looking out into the desert. I don't think you were here for that, but Vidri, he has like a makeout spot with a great view, and it amuses me that it's the same location. So
you're describing it as the makeout spot. Other people would call it the Falcon's Perch, which is where the Fursan have their fortress.
Yes, it's up by the side of a fortress. So it does have a great view.
Yes.
Has Vidrahi etched his and Mumtaz's initials into like a rock or something with a heart around it?
You know what?
I haven't done that, and that really showcases that I'm not. I should do that. I'm serious about this woman.
Okay, so you're planning on it, but for now. Yes. Clem will be ignorant of that this is the makeout spot. And let's see how good it is for serving the desert. We have established it's a great place to enjoy the view, but is it actually strategically useful? Let's find out. Survey.
Yippee.
I was going to offer you a devil's bargain, but you rolled a 6, so it doesn't really matter.
Nice. Because...
Okay, 3 ticks.
Yeah, and I'm just going to highlight this is what I've called it.
You have called it track down some horrific Deathlands pet heart.
Heart.
The heart is the symbol. It's not.
Heart?
Yeah. Yes.
Heart.
Very cute. And 3 ticks. So it turns out you can survey the desert quite well from up here, probably because this is Falcon's Perch and they use it to survey the routes in and out of Uduasha. So basically, I think what this gives you information on is like where the roads go and how they might take you close to these weird, not really even hunting grounds, these weird liminal spaces.
Oh, I love a liminal space, me.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Yeah. Yes. It's funny, the makeout spot has some really good views from this place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. You can also go away from there immediately, because it's like next to where the Fursan hang out, and we have 2 wanted level.
Yeah. But I think we established that it's like in a blind spot for them. It's like under one of the walls. So like they are slightly higher up and can see even further, but you're like directly underneath the watchman, which is why this works.
Yeah. But still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So that's all the downtime actions. And I think what makes sense is to have this conversation with Vidrahi telling everyone that like, yo, I'm going to go fight. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Climb down from the perch. Off we go.
Yeah, we're going to sit next to the water and have a nice conversation. Mushrik Bhai, you're coming too?
Why not?
Exactly.
Yeah. So next to the water where? Sorry?
We're just next to the water in Bundervest.
Oh yeah, looking out over there. Yeah, right. Yeah. Where hanging out with Morpheus. We established he lives by the waterfront. You're welcome in his house. So
Morpheus Bay.
Hanging out by the water.
Yeah, just idly skipping stones.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Let's have a stone skipping competition. I think Vidrahi can throw stones really, really far.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
Yeah, so we see the 3 of you by the water, skipping stones, some nice tea by your side. Morpheus has prepared everything very well.
It's a perfect night, actually.
Yeah. It's a beautiful night.
Yeah.
Did you have a nice time with your girlfriend, Vidrahi? Did you get her something nice?
I did. I got her some sweets. Some very nice sweets. Some gulabs from Gulab Jamuns. And then we just kind of talked for a while. It's a little bit weird. She's like, oh, everything's fine, nothing happened, and so on. But like, I don't know. I didn't want to bring up the whole, you know, did you see this Prince of Endings thing and all that? But we can get to that later. It was a good time. Thank you, Mushfik Bhai, for looking after her.
No bother.
I have something to say. I hinted it to Clem earlier. But something very important is about to happen, which is I have challenged Mylira Clive, daughter of Usta Jai Clive, to a duel. And I have challenged her through Ustad Ankia.
Mm-hmm.
So she must show up. This will happen.
Is this a fight to the death?
Don't worry, Vitor, you got this. You know, we'll train you up.
Thank you, Sharikatam. I don't think there's time for training, but any train, you know, I would love to keep fit and stay warmed up. The thing is, though, I don't know that much about Mylira Clive. All I know is she's Ustad Jai Clive's daughter. I suppose apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. And you know the story. She went to Dasvol, tried to start a school there. Things went badly. A lot of criminal stuff happened. Everyone was saying. And I guess, based on how she tried to kidnap Mumtaz and how she tried to kill Saeed Aunty, we can assume that these rumors are all true. Which means it would be a very good thing for this person's bullshit to be finally put to an end. I don't intend to kill them. She hasn't killed anyone that I care about, though she tried. But she may try to push it to the very final death. And if that comes to it, I will be ready to answer her. However, and you know, he's like saying these things and you can see that he's scared, but he's determined.
I volunteer myself as your second. I think Mylira Clive will try to use whatever fucked up tricks she's learned in Duskfall in whatever way she thinks she could take you down.
Sibling Clem, and I take your hand again. But this time I'm clasping your hand. And then I kind of reach for Mushfik's hand as well. And I say, I will accept Clem as my second, for she has volunteered first. But Mushfik Bhai, I want you to know that this is not, if it really came down to it, I could not choose between the two of you to be my second in an honorable duel. But I suppose we are sidestepping this problem because I do not expect this to be an honorable duel. Mylira Clive will show up to duel me, and I'm sure there'll be 16 other guys with her. Or something. Well, maybe 15, because she got one of her people killed. That's the kind of person she is. So, sibling Clem, you will be my official second. And Mushrik Bhai, you will be my second in practicality as well. In fact, so will Bald Murad, Pilot, and all the others.
Yes. Your third.
Yeah. So this is less a duel now that you're framing it like this and more an actual gang war squaring off between two gangs.
Yeah. So I fundamentally expect it to be. I'm not naive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is probably the way it will play out. And we haven't actually had like just a straight up fight between two gangs happen yet. And I think this makes perfect sense for it because, it's not a fight against all of the Falling Star Sword School, which you would decisively lose. It's a fight against Mylira Clive and all that she can bring, which is still not a fair fight, but you've got a chance. So,
because the thing about that is, I have issued a duel to Mylira Clive, and I've issued this challenge through Ankia, which means every single person of note within the Falling Star School knows that this is meant to be a duel, which means she can't show up with Ankia as she'll have an official second, but she can't show up with a bunch of like swordmasters.
No, exactly. And you have, as mentioned, the success of your last score was persuading
most
of the cool people in the Falling Star Sword School that this is kind of bullshit. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think we're evenly matched as well as we can be.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Very good. So we'll not do the engagement role, but we'll do like the prepping as in gathering information and whatnot.
We could do the engagement role and just like cliffhanger?
Yeah, or sure.
Yeah, and Emma we can see if Emma joins or not.
Yeah. If Emma's here, we may have to take back the engagement role is the only thing, because we might be doing something else in that case. Or maybe we won't. Like, we'll see. But anyway, yes. Do you want to gather some information now that you know that this is happening? I think So the thing I will give you, just like for free here, is that this is just straight up a clash. Like, Malaria Clev is going to show up. She is going to have some thugs. You can gather information about that if you want. But I think the one thing you would know is, like, the location. And what's a good neutral ground location? Because I don't think it should be in Bundervest or wherever it is, the Falling Star hangout. It makes sense that this is a clash, like, not neutral ground exactly, but you get what I mean, somewhere in between. Do we have a cool location in mind?
Nothing specific in mind. I mean, my mind immediately went to let's do the roof ball episode. Let's have them fight on the roofs of the foreign quarter or something. That'd be very cool.
Uh-huh.
Rooftop duel sounds really cool.
Yeah. Bundervest still does make sense as a location, I realize, because you don't just pick a gang war somewhere else. But the roofs of Bundervest, I think, is a very cool idea. Mm. So it's one of those tricky things where you have to pick a location that's not Skovlander control, because then the Skovlanders get involved and everything.
Those damn Skovlanders.
Mm-hmm. So
I was going to suggest that I like the idea of being on roofs, but I don't think it'll be in Bundervest. Mostly because, you know, there's the Skovlander things as well, but like, we have two wanted levels now, and this is where the Fursan have their base.
Yeah.
So I think it makes more sense to put it in Pasarhantu.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe
that is traditionally where gang wars are done.
Yeah. Well, Murder Alley isn't on a roof, but like, you know what I mean. Somewhere in that
around
area.
There. The entire district is weird and vertical. So yeah, let's take a spin on it. It's not on the rooftops. It's like a three-dimensional battle. Because like, the whole reason why Murder Alley is so infamous is that it's really easy to like drop down on people. And, you know, like, basically it's the ideal location to backstab someone and fuck someone over. So if you're going to be like, we're dueling in Murder Alley, then both people know, like, okay, yeah, we're not dueling. This is backhanded shit. The only reason you would want to fight there is so that you can have a friend shoot the other person in the back. So perfect. Great location for it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
The funny thing about this location also is that technically it switches turf between various gangs and so on, but in every practical sense, the Rakshasa own it. So.
You know what? I'm going to prep by going to see our Rakshasa friend.
Oh, who is our Rakshasa friend?
Dobby.
Oh, the one who was just introduced. Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to go speak to him. In Gilly.
Yes. Absolutely. So he was working the district of Ashcloister, but I guess he's in Gilly.
Yeah, because quick description of Gilly. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's the farming district. It's inside like a kind of like crevasse, like watered with like water and so on. So there's like wet soil that people grow crops in. It's very dark down there. And they also have the cremation ghats, which is where the bones that the Rakshasa gather, they're brought over here to be burnt.
Yes.
And this is where the Rakshasa have a temple to their god, who has many names. These many names are along like two themes. Like, you know, there's like the Queen of Mercy, the mercy-minded one, things like that. Yeah. And the other family of names she has is variations on She Who Slays in the Dark.
Yeah.
She is the goddess of mercy and murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm going to speak to... And we are going to have a fight, possibly to the death, in Murder Alley.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It makes sense to prepare by speaking to this guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is the fact that they have a cat is why I named him Dobby, because Dobby cat.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah. So he, I guess you find this guy probably by asking around for him. He is like famous for working in Ashcloister, and yeah, he's a small man. He's very garishly dressed, so he stands out among the otherwise fairly like pragmatic and ragged Rakshasa. And I think at the moment where you find him, he's off his shift. So he is shirtless. He is relaxing. He's leaning back on a like carpet that he got from somewhere. That's like a very nice carpet. And he is playing a flute.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. You know, I called him sir earlier, but now we are in his temple.
Mm-hmm.
So I will approach him respectfully with like a basket of, I don't know, raisins.
Yeah.
Best offering I could find.
And he sits up and goes, huh? What? Am I being too... Oh, hello. And he, you know, recognizes you from before.
Hello, merciful sir. Merciful one. I am here to beseech you. I am here for your blessings. And for the blessings of the Queen of Mercy.
Oh, that's weird. You didn't kill the last guy, did you? I mean, you can tell me in confidentiality if you did, but...
No. I don't know what happened there. The one person who would know is unconscious and poisoned. And the other person is not someone who would want to speak to me on such matters. But I will have an interview with this person very soon.
I just remembered all the Rakshas have a pet, don't they? We didn't
see this. Yeah.
But I think he would feed his pet the raisins. For whatever reason, I'm envisioning him having a pigeon. So his pet pigeon will eat the raisins.
Mm. Psychopomp.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I'm sitting next to him watching the pigeon eat the raisins. And I think when the pigeon eats the raisins, he starts, Toby starts chewing. Like, he's not eating anything, but Toby's chewing, making chewing motions.
Yeah.
I would say, I will have an interview with this person very soon in a place that is well known to the mercy-minded one. This is called Murder Alley.
Oh.
So you understand the nature of this interview?
Yeah, I'm... I don't really know you that well, but I feel very sorry for you, I gotta say.
I also feel very sorry for myself in this situation, but it must be done.
Sometimes I guess that is how it is. Mm-hmm.
And since such is the way of things, I have come to you with my offerings as a priest of the mercy-minded one and as a priest of she who... And I think, like, it's...
Yeah.
Outsiders can only say this name if they really mean it.
Yeah. Exactly.
And a priest of she who slays in the dark. And I think even saying the name here, like, causes the wind to change.
Yeah. You say it out loud and he looks at you and he goes like, okay, you are 100% serious about this. So he has been, like, somewhat more, like, not casual, but, like, informal with you. But now he sits up straight. And he goes, well, I'm ready to accept your offerings. And traditionally, they come in something valuable, discarded or thrown away. Or in the form of a song, if you're more inclined. And the thing that is known about the Rakshasa is that something valuable, discarded and thrown away is the cheap offering. The song is somehow considered more expensive.
So I think about this for a while and says, and I think I start to hum.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yeah.
And yes, you are offering him a song. And what do you actually want to acquire here?
An asset.
An asset. Mm-hmm.
The blessings. The blessings. I don't know what that would do, but we will have the blessings.
Yes. Okay. So, normally this would cost you a rep or a coin to acquire an asset.
But this is on hunting grounds. Because we're at war.
So it's free. Yes. Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. Then it's just free.
Yep. Okay. So roll plus crew tier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can I have a devil's bargain?
Okay, yes, why not? I was already going to have this cost you some things. You know what? We haven't brought in this clock in a while, and I think it's a reasonable clock because you have like a super cool detective, Captain Peregrine, investigating you, and he is specifically investigating Bidruhi. And I think Bidruhi going to see these people would advance his investigation. So I think that's your devil's bargain. He will tick his progress clock on investigating you.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take that.
It's straightforward. I could have taken something supernatural here, but we haven't seen Peregrine for a while, so let's tick his clock.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a 5, so I get a quality 1 blessing, essentially, right?
Yep. Yep.
Do you want to up that? This is important. I'm going to offer him... What valuables do I actually have, I'm wondering. I think I'd be spending it on clothes, right? That's the kind of person I am.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing both, like both the song and the...
Yeah, so I'm going to give him like 2 coins worth, so 4 stash worth of like clothes and like knickknacks and so on. And it really doesn't matter in terms... These aren't things that they keep. They throw these all into the fire. There's like a... They have a special place that they just dump things from into the fire of Dudu.
Yeah,
I'm going to give them this.
They do not accept gifts from the living, but she who slays in the dark accepts everything from the living, including their lives. So,
yes.
Very good. I think the symbolic thing here also is probably, and what gives this a little bit more extra spiritual weight, is that this is, of course, Tumdurji's work.
Yes.
Yep.
So, pushed it up to quality 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Quality 3 blessings. Okay.
Yes. Quality 3 blessings. The one thing I will add is that he will accompany your song on the flute, and he will learn it on his flute. And it is, of course, a bone flute, because what else would it be? They use the bones for things.
Excellent.
Yep.
Love me 2 times, girl. 1 for tomorrow, 1 just for today.
And who else? Does anyone else want to gather information or acquire assets? Like, you could gather information on Mylera, or on the location, or whatnot. Or you could just go in blind. That also works.
I think we should... I guess, like, the Falling Stars, like, divided, right? So, like, I guess we should try to figure out how many people are on her side, so we know, like, what to expect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's reasonable.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Maybe the best person to ask would be just someone in the Falling Star.
Yeah. You could just... I guess you could go hang out with either Ranveer or Shaw. You became friends with them last time, kind of.
Yeah. Shaw seems like the... You know, probably the best bet. Like, he gave away a lot without really any prompting.
Yep.
So,
he's not a contact or anything, so you don't get a bonus dice, but it's possible to talk to him,
The approach is going to be, so Mushfik's going to go as Captain Mackerel, because that's how Shaw knows him.
Yeah? Yes.
And then just start complaining about work and hope that Shaw also starts opening up. Like, oh man, my boss is like really on, you know, like on my case, you know, like.
Oh yeah, he thinks you're an actor playing a sea captain in an opera, to be clear.
Yeah. I'm like, the rehearsal schedules,
There's no healthcare.
Unbelievable, you know, like
this is incredible. Okay, yes, absolutely. Okay, go for it. Yeah. Make the role. I don't think we need to make it a scene, but I love the idea.
I'm gonna say this is concerned because while I'm I'm not the guy I claim to be. I am still genuinely complaining about work.
Yes. Absolutely. Consort. Okay. No bonus dice, but let's see how good information you get.
Just fortune or what?
Why are you complaining about work? No, you don't have a job.
Yes. Listen. I don't have a job. I'm an entrepreneur of a business that is on the edge of the law.
Yeah. Yep.
The cutting edge.
The cutting edge, yeah. Precisely.
Yes. Excellent.
Oh, it's a 3.
Okay. So you don't really get any follow-up questions. You just get some information. Yeah. I think what happens is that he's going to complain about a lot of stuff. Because, and he's not going to complain about Malera Clev very much because she's just beneath him. But in all of this complaining, I think what you'll get, roughly, is that Clev has surrounded herself with... she hasn't been able to lure very many people from the Falling Star away because they're martial artists. They're not simple thugs. But she is, and she has connections. So she has gotten... members from a different gang to help her out.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he doesn't know who, because they're all beneath him, right? He goes like, So she hangs out with some thugs for some reason. They were going to help her do this job, which I think is stupid and unworthy of her. Hang out with thugs as the Ustad's daughter. Psh.
Okay, hang on. Does Malarokrev doesn't count as high society, right?
No.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. But we are gathering info for a score that is currently on our hunting runs, so you should get an extra dice.
Okay.
For gathering info. That's part of the rules.
Okay, so I guess I'll just roll again.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't notice before.
Yep.
And it's a 4.
Get some follow-ups.
Okay.
So I guess we know the gang?
Yeah. Yes, I guess you know the gang. And I think... that it is, like, she has been trying to ingratiate herself with the various gangs in the local area. And I think it is the Bone Shakers, because why not?
Mm-hmm.
They're a gang we haven't seen yet.
All right.
The Bone Shakers are mostly, like, a gang of people not from Udvasha. Most of them come from the desert or from, like, the other parts of Iruvia. And I think Mylera has struck some sort of a deal with them to get a couple of their thugs. This is smart politically for 2 reasons. 1, she doesn't have to persuade the Falling Star people. And 2, she can play it off as just like, oh, we were in Murder Alley dueling and then an unrelated gang happened to jump us and just so happened to kill my opponent. How unfortunate. So she has hired thugs. I mean, she has the money, so... This can be both a problem and an asset for you, I imagine.
Good info.
That is good info, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sha.
What a king.
Yeah.
What a guy.
Yeah. So I guess he mentions, he probably doesn't mention them by name, but he goes like, yeah, it's a bunch of loan sharks. And when he says that, everybody in Udvasha knows which one the loan shark gang is. It's the Bone Shakers. They are a gang known for running gambling businesses, getting people horribly into debt, and then beating the shit out of them if they don't get their money. That's basically their MO. So they're good at thugging.
And they play by the rules, is that right? Interesting. Can Clem go and spread some rumours to essentially about what happened with Saida and Mylera Clev, that Mylera Clev's an underhanded piece of shit?
I mean, yeah.
And cannot be trusted. And you should probably not work for her, because she'll turn on you just as easily as she would turn on Duskfall.
Okay, how we'll handle this is Mylera Clev has acquired an asset, and she has spent some money into this, and so on. We can treat this as an acquire asset in the opposite direction to unacquire her assets.
I want to unacquire Mylera Clev's assets.
I think that's the cleanest way to spend it, even though it's a weird read on the rules. But
yeah, I think that's going to be fun.
Yeah, we're doing an acquire asset in reverse. So obviously she has some people of her own, but her main plan was these hired thugs. And let's see if you can strip away some of the hired thugs.
Sounds great. Shall I roll using Crew Tier then?
Yeah, I think so, because it's an acquire asset. Yeah, and you will have to spend some sort of resource because you've used your free asset. So
Is it okay if I spend some rep on that? And then I'll...
It makes sense to spend rep. So someone knock off 1 rep and...
Done it. All good.
We'll see the roll.
No, not really got anybody who can help me here. Do we have anyone who can help us? Just thinking.
Remind me what you're doing. You're trying to undermine my...
Yeah, undermine.
Yeah,
I mean...
Basically acquiring an asset, which is just removing her asset that she acquired. So it's
we do have our man of the people, right?
I got someone. We have our man of the people, and we could lean on him. But the Falling Star School is patronized by House Unruckus.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a man on the inside for House Unruckus.
But it's not a rumor being spread with House Unruckus now. It's a rumor being spread with the Bone Shakers. Right? Yeah. That was the idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would our man of the people also then have access to that?
I don't think so, actually. I don't think Alcadar has very much to do with them. They're a bunch of, like, loan sharks.
Okay, I know I...
because there's fingers in every pies, but I don't think we can just say Alcadar knows everyone personally.
Okay. I know a guy whom we haven't seen in a while, but whom we'd love to see whenever he shows up, who is definitely a gambling man. It's Bahadur Badur.
Bahadur Badur. Okay.
Yes.
Sure.
He can be Urien.
Okay.
Bahadur Badur, the daredevil, hang glider, debonair, action man.
Yes. He has been in this. Yeah, he has been in this.
Yes. He said gusts up, dude.
Yeah, gusts up, dude. Okay. Bahadur Badur, sure. But he's not your favorite contact, so he won't just spread rumors with the loan sharks that he definitely owes money for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the cleanest way to do it is to give him some coin, honestly. Like, if he owes the money, the easy way is to give him the coin so he can pay off his debt, and then have him, you know, go there, pay them the money, get back in their good graces, and be like, yeah, dudes, my Lara Club's no good, man.
Mm-hmm. Let's spend some crew coin. Oh, by the way, we should definitely do a score that's just for money. Sometime, let's do that. Let's do that sometime.
spend a crew coin here, and I think if you... This is not to improve the assets, just if you don't do that, Bahadur Badur will get in trouble. It's just like a cost because he's not a favorite contact.
I mean, he can just hang glide away from the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can't hang glide away from all your problems, unfortunately. Uh-huh.
To be clear, this is optional. You don't have to give him the coin. It's just when you lean on a contact who's not your favorite contact, there are consequences sometimes. So
let's have some consequences. I like consequences.
Bahadur Badur? Okay. Okay.
Let me be clear here. Are you giving him a coin or are you not giving him a coin?
No. Clem's not paying for this bum.
Okay. Very good.
No, I'm going to cause issues.
Bahadur Badur has gambling debts.
I'll have you know, many people pay good money for that bum.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then we know that his gambling debts are bad. Write it down.
And I've made them. Made
them
worse.
Let it be known.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you get a five. Bidruhi, he's your contact. So write down a project. It's 6 ticks. Find Bahadur. He's gone underground.
He's gone underground, but he can't hang glide down there.
Yeah, I know. Well, probably not underground, but he's hiding from his debts.
Yeah, fair enough.
So until you find him, you can't use him again as a contact. I think that's... Yeah.
He would never go literally underground because he needs the freedom. Then again, we have established that you can hang glide underground. We established that in season one.
Yes. Maybe he heard that and he's experimenting with it while he's waiting it out anyway.
Good times.
Okay. However, you get a 5, so that means tier 1. So you have a tier 1 anti-asset at Mylera Clev. If you want this asset to go away entirely for her, you need to hit tier 3. So you can spend 2 coin, is it? To pump up the tier. Otherwise, you will just strip away some of the gang.
Yeah, I'll do that. Clem's all in. Clem is the one who has a lot of money.
Okay, so
who has some money.
Okay, so you're not giving any money to Bahadur, but he gives you an in with a loan shark. He goes like, yeah, talk to this guy, and then you go to that guy, give him a bunch of money to badmouth
my doing it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Fuck you. Sorry, Bidri. I don't like your guy. This is my problem. I'm going to. I've got the in, and I spend. I think it's not in the form of coin. It's in the form of ancestral steel weaponry.
Okay. She's so you're spending stockpiling. 4 stash.
Mm-hmm.
4 stash. All right.
So you turn them on her.
Yeah, well, they're happy for more steel. Okay, so this means that the tier in either direction now is 0. So basically, I think they just won't turn up. I think that's what's going to happen.
You know what? This turns this is this even a score anymore? Because my Lyric Club is just going to show up and just get bum rushed by 3 people.
She's got some of her guys.
Oh, yeah, sure.
She's not entirely relying on mercs. That would also be stupid. Mm. Like, hiring mercenaries is smart. Relying on them as your only backup is stupid. So,
okay.
If I spent all of my coin, all of my stash, could we get the bone shakers on our side instead?
You can absolutely flip them. They started as an asset on -3, and they are paid off. So you took them from a -3 asset up to a 0 asset. You can spend more and make them a tier 1 or tier 2 asset in your favor.
I mean, you could do that, and I think normally it'd be cool. But I think,
this is a 1v1. Yeah, that's cool.
It's meant to be a 1v1, and she's going to bring backup as well. But I think if we have the bone shakers on our sides, we'll look like the assholes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you just the bone shakers in an amazing position here because they just got paid by both sides to do nothing. So.
And that's how you make money, baby.
Yep, yep.
We should learn something from them.
Yeah. I mean, they just got 6 points for no
Wait a minute, we're bravos. This is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yes.
What are we doing?
I mean, well, extortion. We need to start doing some extorting.
Yeah, let's go extort some scovs. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. We'll figure it out. But yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Sure. I'm going to start a faction clock called Bone Shakers Tear Up.
Excellent.
Because I think things are looking well for them at the moment. Their main rivals also got their asses kicked by you earlier. So there we go. I'm going to give them some ticks to it already. Because
Okay. Should we roll engagement and then leave off? Or do we do that next session?
I think we can roll engagement now. It's fun. If it turns out that for whatever reason we can't do the score next session, then we'll just ignore it, I guess. But hopefully we can.
I'm sure we'll be able to. Well, good. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me go through the engagement roll questions and then we'll finish. So then we'll do XP actually and then we'll finish.
Mm-hmm.
Is this operation particularly bold or daring? Is it?
No. No, I don't think so.
For once, I think it's not particularly bold or daring. It's just a fight. Like, if a fight is dangerous, but when you're bravos.
Well, there's still 2 tiers above us.
Yeah. But it's also, you've done so much worse work.
That's true.
Like
that's
making
true.
Sure her allies don't back her up, making sure her mercs don't back her up. So I don't fear you anymore. You're being careful.
Fair enough, actually.
Well, actually, I also have one thing, though, because we were kind of building this up, like, you know, Vitor is nervous about this fight. So, like, even, you know, maybe without the mercs, like.
It's also not complex or contingent on many factors. So it's one. To be clear, it's still dangerous. But, I mean, every score is dangerous. You only get the particularly bold or daring if it's.
That's true.
Yeah.
Does the plan's detail expose a vulnerability of the target or hit them where the weakest? I think so, because she is not aware that her mercenaries are not going to show up.
Mm.
And do they have special preparations? Yes, but you took some of those away. So I think you have +1 die here, so 2 dice. Can any friends or contacts provide aid or insight for this operation? They have already, arguably, but that was kind of related to the... Actually, both of those were related to the asset bit. So I don't think they count for the engagement role. They haven't provided any further aid or insight. So 2 dice. Any enemies or rivals interfering in the operation? Anyone want to volunteer their enemies or rivals?
Captain Peregrine? Or is he more of a looming threat in the background?
I think he's more of a looming threat at this point. I think he would definitely hear about this, but I don't think he would show up in the fight and be like, break it up.
So would Jackal hear about this? Because we established that Jackal is now feeding some complicated things for Bidruhi.
Yes, I think Jackal makes a lot more sense. Okay, so Jackal interferes. That puts you back to 1 die. Are there any other elements you want to consider? No, not really in this situation, I think. So it's 1 die, unless you have some special ability that modifies engagement rules.
We do not.
Yep, then it's 1 die. It's not the worst, but it's also not the best.
I have issued the challenge. I will roll.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 5. Perfect.
Okay, so risky. We will find out what that means next session. See you next time.
Here close the doors to the House of Endings. Those who dwell within are Soheb, called Claude, Adiat, called Soap, Saumitri, called Tree, Salty, and Emma. I have been Prince, your host. Our City of Uduasha is based on Blades in the Dark by John Harper and Evil Hat Productions, with special thanks to Johnstone Metzger. Follow us on Twitter or support us on ko-fi.com/desperateattune. If you want to engage further with us, we also have a Patreon at patreon.com/desperateattune, where you will get our newsletter, extra content, and updates from Uduasha. Next time on Desperate Attune.
Because you may not have killed anyone, but Mushvig has killed so many times. So many times. Oh, God.
Tell me about the many times that you have killed people and how they have traumatized you for life and left you a broken shell of a man who cannot relate to other human beings.
Okay, sure, why not? Let's do that.